Maybe the most important thing is making sure that there's clarity around decision rights and ownership of AI-related work streams. You know, there's nothing more dangerous than a skeptic who is also a key influencer of his or her peers. Given the pace of change with AI, you cannot be a good strategic decision maker if you don't have a really good sense of how the technology is evolving and what is that shifting line between where there is opportunity and where there is limitation.
Welcome everyone to today's episode of the AMP to 11 podcast. We are honored to have today's guest, Aaron Cuny, who's going to be speaking with us today about ethical leadership and building AI for equity in education. I'm joined by my incredible podcast co-host, Rebecca Boltzma. Rebecca, how are you doing today?
I'm good. And I always love a podcast title that has ethical in the title. So I'm extra excited to be here. Looking forward to talking to Aaron and getting to know him a little bit better.
Well, we'd have to put that in if we're speaking to Aaron Cuny. So Aaron, welcome to today's episode. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Glad to be here. And thanks for the opportunity to speak with you guys.
Yeah. So for today's listeners, just in case you're wondering why this isn't one of our marathon hour-long sessions, Aaron has a six-year-old who just recently had a medical procedure. So we're going to make sure we get him back to that child, in the near future. So we're going to jump right in if that's okay. Aaron, that sound good to you?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So Aaron, first of all, you know, in your role at AI for Equity as the co-founder, I'd love it if you can kind of give us the longest version, the shortest version, your favorite version of your why, and how did you get to where you are today? And what are some of those, you know, things you've learned on your journey to co-founding AI for Equity?
So my background is in classrooms. I spent 18 years working in a school building as a teacher first, as a school leader. I co-founded a charter school that I led in DC for a while. And like so many people, in the fall of 2022, early winter of 2023, I was really compelled by ChatGPT and started thinking about the use cases in education. And I remember having this moment where I sent an email to the co-founder of the charter school that I'd co-founded. And I said, oh, hey, here's this really interesting, you know, technology, and here's a great use case for schools. And then, you know, within a few days, I think I had replied to that same email 20 times with all of these use cases that just, it became this waterfall. And for me, I think that was just this moment when I realized the implications for our work in schools would be really big. And kind of the short version is that led to a launch of AI for Equity as a nonprofit in spring of 2023. And since then, we've been really fortunate to work with a bunch of innovative school system leaders from across the country, learning with them and learning from them, and really positioning them to be exemplars that the rest of the ecosystem can learn from as we go forward.
So what are some of the specifics of exactly what you do with schools when you work with them? This example of innovative school systems you work with, what do typical days and weeks and months look like?
We see school system leaders as the key levers for change. As we think about, you know, who are the folks who are setting the vision, who's managing the budget and guiding resource allocation, who's making decisions about what gets time on the leadership agenda, what gets time on Friday afternoon during teacher professional development. Those folks are school system leaders. And while we think it's important that we're, you know, building the AI literacy and competency of folks at all levels of the system, we're really leaning in on building the capacity of senior school system leaders to be good decision makers on all things AI, everything from adult work streams to student-facing tools, to the really, really big implications for curriculum and instruction. And so kind of what that looks like, you know, structurally is we facilitate virtual communities of practice on a monthly basis. And we do that for role-based groups. So we have a group of AI quarterbacks who we convene, senior instructional leaders, senior talent leaders, and then we have a data, IT, and operations group. And the vast majority of the school systems who we are working with this year in SY 25-26 have been partners of ours over the last several years. And so we've had the opportunity to develop some really nice longitudinal relationships with these folks. And instead of serving kind of new groups, we say like we're not PD for all organizations. So we are not looking to do like AI 101 over and over with new groups of school systems, but rather we're trying to support a set of the top innovators longitudinally over time so we can get kind of deeper and deeper and peel back the layers of what it looks like to innovate. So we convene these folks virtually once a month, and we address both the strategic side of the work across all of those functions. And then we also really lean in tactically. That comes from, I think, a big lesson learned that we have had over the last couple of years, which is given the pace of change with AI, you cannot be a good strategic decision maker if you don't have a really good sense of how the technology is evolving and what is that shifting line between where there is opportunity and where there is limitation. You know, something that where that line was 3 months ago is different than where it is today. So we spend time talking about the AI adoption curve and thinking about systems for pilots, but we also spend a lot of time looking at, you know, demos of how products are evolving in the ed tech market, how the foundational models are evolving, and, you know, what the implications of those are for school-based work streams. So we try to kind of split time between the strategic and the tactical, you know, all towards the goal of making sure that the folks that we're supporting are really positioned to be great decision makers about both opportunity and risk.
So how do you empower these leaders to make good ethical decisions about ed tech tools specifically? What are some of the things that you teach them or that you talk about?
In terms of like being good decision makers in the product marketplace, our leaders are coming to us with content expertise. So, you know, I think about like our talent community of practice. They know talent work really well. These are, you know, generally folks who are in senior talent positions in strong school systems around the country. And we are kind of on the tactical side, we are engaging them in exploring how AI can be leveraged in talent workflows, how, you know, we're teeing up opportunities for them to share with the community how they are already leveraging AI in talent workflows. And so, you know, we are a community of practice. So sometimes we are coming to the table to, you know, share things with them that we think are interesting or compelling, but there's also space for them to bring to our community what they are learning. And so we, you know, because we, I think, have these longitudinal relationships, and it's a conversation that we get to revisit each month. We have folks who, you know, will learn about something 1 month and go out and try it the next month, and they'll come back and say, "Hey, this is actually getting some traction in our community. We're starting to, you know, leverage the technology in this way, and we find that, you know, it's what we're getting back is quality and it's reliable." Or conversely, you know, we'll tee something up, or someone will hear about something from a peer and they'll go out and try it, and they'll come back the next month and say, "Actually, like, this seems like this is a little bit more hype than substance." And so I think just having the space for that conversation helps us kind of pair the content expertise of our leaders with the emerging exploration that we're all doing about the technology to figure out, you know, what's going to stick and what's going to have meaningful and substantive use case implications that allows them to do their work more effectively.
Aaron, first of all, thank you for, you know, guiding today's leaders, right? It's a really challenging time to lead. AI has created opportunity, but also, you know, with the lack of guidance and support, it can feel even more difficult than ever. So just want to say thank you for supporting these leaders through this time. I'd love it if you're willing to, you know, for our listeners out there, whether it's someone who's longitudinally you've been supporting or someone you've recently been supporting, could you maybe share like one anecdote of a specific school or a specific leader who's really blossomed or created something really impactful that you'd love to share today with our audience?
I can share about a few systems that I think have really gotten the work of AI leadership right, and maybe, you know, some different pathways that they've taken to get there. I think about Ednovate in Southern California as one example. I see you nodding your head, Brett. You know, when Ednovate came to our community, I think AI was already something that was, you know, very much on the radar of Oliver Sikat, the CEO there. And I think they're an example of a network that's, I think, led in a really innovative way because of the conviction, Oliver's leadership on this topic. And, you know, so many of the, we have a leadership roadmap that involves, you know, vision setting and making sure you've got clear roles and responsibilities around AI and facilitating an AI task force and amplifying power users, you know, so I could go on, you know, in terms of the things in our roadmap. And I think, you know, Ednovate has done so many of those things well over the last couple of years. And really, you know, Oliver was like the impetus for that. Another example, I think, of a real positive outlier and a leader in terms of AI leadership across the country right now is Dream Charter Schools in New York. And you know, when Dream joined our community of practice, I would say AI was not necessarily something that was maybe on their radar, the radar of the senior leadership, in the same way that was the case with Ednovate in Southern California. But I think their senior leadership recognized quickly that this was a topic that deserved some attention, deserved some time on the leadership agenda. It deserved the allocation of some time in someone's job to be paying attention to this. And so, you know, their C-suite, I think, while they themselves weren't as maybe directly involved in the way that Oliver was, I think they recognized the importance of it. They made sure that it got the right attention and strategy and resource allocation and human capital, you know, attention. And that their network, I think, has really just developed a strong culture around innovation in general over the last couple of years, and kind of more narrowly as it relates to AI. And that has allowed them to, like, we have seen that can trickle down to all levels of the organization in terms of the buy-in for leveraging the technology, the buy-in for exploring on just like from a frontline standpoint, exploring how AI can get leveraged to create, you know, more efficiencies and effectiveness in workflows from the talent team to the IT team to the ops team to the instructional team. But I think in both of those examples that I gave, even though they were slightly different, the key was that there was C-suite buy-in early on to say this is something important and we're going to make sure that it gets attention. Not because AI itself is one of the top three, you know, goals that we have as an organization, but rather because AI has relevancy to the talent retention goals that we have. You know, if we think about, if we were to, you know, survey district leaders across the country and ask them about what are your top goals right now, you know, it's probably going to be some combination of some goals around academic, you know, outcomes and retention of top leaders, you know, retention of top teachers, probably something having to do with the budget. And, you know, AI has implications for all of those things. So in very few of the, if I were to think about who are our top innovators, in few to maybe none of those examples is AI itself one of the top goals, but rather I think all of those innovators see it as something that has relevance for the goals that are at the top of their list as a school system for this year and beyond.
Excellent. I think just want to highlight what you just said. Obviously, you're working with leaders, and it sounds like the leaders that are benefiting from your organization are the ones who recognize they've already set goals. They already know their community well enough to know where they need to get to. They're using, you know, the wisdom they're gathering from you to recognize AI is the tool that can help them reach those goals, maybe quicker, maybe at a higher level of success, but it is the tool and the vessel to reaching goals that they've already defined. So that's great that you're really empowering them there. You also said something that I really want to make sure we highlight, the The 2025-2026 school year is one like none other when it comes to educators having to make really challenging decisions, right? You have all this new technology. In some cases, it's fantastic and it could really change outcomes for students if it's done ethically and implemented well. And yet you also now have a budget crisis that is many years in the making, and it's a number of factors are attributing to that, and school districts and states are really struggling. So this is probably something everyone's going to want to pay attention and listen to. But Aaron, in your area of expertise, what are some of the major gaps that states, private institutions, philanthropy should be funding? And then are there any out there that you want to highlight that people should know about and start taking advantage of if they exist?
I appreciate that question, because I think that people will follow the money, right? And so if funders and states are saying this is the thing that we think is most important, then I think that's going to inform, you know, how the market evolves. You know, maybe zooming out for a second, as we think about AI's implications for schools, and I think therefore what school system leaders have to be prepared to lead on, there are a few different buckets. We think about AI's implications for adult work streams, for student-facing tools, for the future of curriculum and instruction. And that is everything from something like AI literacy to, I think, separate from AI literacy, just what are the implications of AI for the learning outcomes that we have for kids across content areas? For example, like, what are the future of ELA learning outcomes in a world where, you know, the adults in the labor market are leveraging AI for reading and writing, you know, in the ways that we are starting to see now? So I think there are just profound implications for the future of curriculum instruction. And then the other category we think about is just AI's implications for how students are showing up to us, acculturated into this world of AI, in the same way that schools are now serving students who have been acculturated into this world of social media. There's, I think, big implications for serving kids who are acculturated into a world of AI. And so I think directly to your question, we have seen much funding go towards the technology and the tools so far. And proportionally, I think less funding and investment go into the human capital capacity building work that we think is foundational to a healthy market. So I was an economics major back in the day. And you know, one of the things you learn is that markets function really well when you have an informed demand. When the demand side of the equation, you know, is informed, it will eventually push the supply side in the right direction. And right now, I think by and large, we have, if we think about who is the demand in our education system, it is largely, you know, school system leaders. They're the ones that are deciding, you know, what technology is going to get leveraged, what tools are going to get purchased. And I would say that, is the demand side sufficiently informed? Are they sufficiently informed consumers and discriminating consumers of the technology yet? No, I do not think that that is the case. So we've seen lots of investment go into tech and tools, but I think proportionally we have underinvested in human capital and positioning those school system leaders to be the discriminating consumers that they need to be, that will serve as the foundation of how the tech and product side of the market, you know, eventually evolves. So if I was to nudge, you know, the folks with the purse strings in what, you know, in a direction, it would be towards more investments in building the capacity of school system leaders to be good decision makers as it relates to this technology. The other place that I think we've just underinvested in is work that is getting at what the future of curriculum and instruction looks like. I've heard very little about rethinking standards. We've heard very little about rethinking what the next generation of HQIM looks like. You know, the ELA curriculum that is going to serve kids well over the next decade, and that aligns with the competencies they're going to have to succeed in the workplace. Like that, today's ELA curriculum maybe gets at some of that, but certainly there's huge gaps. And so I think we need more funding to rethink what learning outcomes we need to prioritize, and then backwards mapping from that, what is the curriculum, what is the student programming that's ultimately going to ensure that there's alignment between, you know, what it takes for kids to flourish personally and professionally in the labor market, and then what our school system is preparing them for.
Aaron, let's pretend that you had the power to ban three overhyped buzzwords related to AI. What would they be?
Transform, transform, transform.
Make the list as long as you want. We should share notes. My list is getting long, and I appreciate that you're not using a lot of them, but I'm just curious what you're seeing, what you're hearing, and I know you have a list.
I would just say, I think if you've worked in schools long enough, you know that change happens gradually, that there is no, like, nothing is a silver bullet or a panacea. I heard, this is borrowed from, you know, someone else somewhere along the way, but I heard at one point that running a great school is 101% solutions. And there's no singular thing that's going to lead to a, you know, the achievement gap getting closed by, you know, 50% or 30%. And so I think we do this work at AI for Equity because we believe if we don't position school system leaders who are serving kids furthest from opportunity to be good decision makers on AI to capitalize on the opportunities to manage the risks, then AI could be something that exacerbates the achievement gap or the opportunity gap. Not because we think AI is a panacea or that is going to magically transform the work that is happening in schools. So I think I don't love it when I hear, you know, the phrase that AI is going to transform the work of schools, because I think it is just like real change is so much more complicated than what even this, you know, magical technology, I think, will be able to drive in our school systems.
All right. First of all, Rebecca, thank you. Oh, Rebecca, I feel like I just watched a light bulb go off over your head. What are you thinking?
Actually, I was just wondering when he was talking about kind of all the exciting things, the light bulb you probably saw was, I was just wondering, like, I'm always curious about this too, with people who are early adopters like we were. What were like your oh wow moments, like with AI or in your work where you were like, oh my gosh, that actually worked? Your light bulb, like exciting, like, you know, we all have a handful, but I'm curious, what are yours from like a human, like putting aside the company and the business, like a moment where you as a human were like, this is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I think I shared the, you know, my initial entry point, you know, I shared the example of it just kind of, you know, in early spring, late winter of 2023, starting to think through those first use cases in schools and trying them out in, you know, whatever, ChatGPT 3.5, I guess it was at that point.
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah. So certainly like those moments stand out as particularly powerful and were the impetus for the work, you know, my own personal, I think, investment in the work that I do today. I also think about like my first moments of using deep research, you know, maybe nine months ago, January 2025. You know, I just remember being struck by the quality of the output. And I think that was a real, you know, moving from maybe what we had kind of access to in terms of output prior to that point, and, you know, what like a deep research report could provide for. That was like a moment that stands out just in terms of, you know, being struck by the trajectory of progress in the technology.
I wanted to ask similarly to Rebecca, I really liked how she really got you to think of three words. And I think that really, I enjoy like hearing exactly, right? It really made you narrow your focus for a second. So something I also think about, like AI tools, AI rollouts, initiatives in schools. First, I want you to give The one piece of advice, like the one thing, if there's an ed tech org out there or someone who thinks they have the AI tool that will transform school and society, what is the one thing you want to make sure they hear from you today? And then similarly, what is the one piece of advice you would give to the opposite side, the educational school system leader, on like what's the exact best piece of advice you need to take right now as you continue through the 25-26 school year?
Yeah. So I would say to the folks that are building products, I think by this point, everybody gets that they need to be engaging their end users. And, you know, I doubt that there's an ed tech, you know, builder out there who doesn't have, you know, some group of educators who they're engaging with around the product. Maybe this slightly different or more refined like advice that I would have is that I think that there is in terms of how discriminating the consumer is and the lens that consumer has on the system level implications of the technology, there's a difference between engaging teachers, a random group of teachers, and engaging, let's say, very discriminating instructional leaders in high performing school systems. So if I was building a product right now, I would find the highest performing school systems in the country, and I would go find the very best instructional leaders in those systems. And those would be the people who I would want product feedback from, because I think those are folks who are bringing deep content expertise. They are thinking about the kind of systems level implications of a technology, and they're doing that within the context of a school system that is functioning well. I just think like that's the sweet spot of the folks whose feedback will probably be most helpful over the long term. To the question of like, what's the top advice I would have for school system leaders? I think you need a clear roadmap. And while this is an emergent technology, and you know, we're building the plane as we're flying it, there are roadmaps out there. You know, we just launched something called the AI Innovation Index. So we have a roadmap that is, you know, a part of that initiative that we're, you know, seeking to scale broadly. But I think if you're a senior school system leader, you need a roadmap. You need to get really clear. Maybe the most important thing is making sure that there's clarity around decision rights and ownership of AI-related work streams. So many challenges in schools and organizations result from the collective action issue. When everybody is responsible for something, no one is responsible. And that's typically not a problem for ELA instruction or for attendance. These are long-standing kind of topics or work streams in most school system for which there's, you know, clear designation of roles and responsibilities and in the best cases, maybe some clarity around decision rights. But AI is this new thing, and most school systems, I think, haven't yet brought clarity to who is owning various aspects of the work, who gets to weigh in, who approves high stakes decisions. And so when you don't have that clarity, folks are just going to kind of, sometimes the work just is not going to happen. Or if it does happen, it's going to happen dysfunctionally because, you know, this group thinks that it should be their decision and this other group thinks it should be their decision. So I think you got to bring clarity to leadership. You got to bring clarity to the question of decision rights. And then you've got to have systems for progress monitoring your work against that roadmap. So, you know, our AI Innovation Index will hopefully position a lot of school systems across the country to have a roadmap and to progress monitor their work against that roadmap over time. But, you know, how I think we'll see various iterations of how school systems want to leverage this technology. But I think that kind of fundamental, you know, we talk about it as like leader condition setting work, like the C-suite needs to be setting the condition for the work to proceed kind of functionally in the way that other work streams are already set up for in most school districts right now.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I assume that the people that you're getting are people who are curious and open to change potentially. How are they, or how are you? And we've all been working in AI and education. And so we know there's a lot of educators out there who are very uncomfortable with this new technology or feel very strongly that it should not be used in education, or they're not interested in learning it and changing teaching practice. What are your messages or your strategies when you're either coaching leaders to work with people like that on their staff? Or I don't know if you get any of those leaders that you end up working with, but how are you navigating that? Because I'm finding that's people are settling into more like two specific camps these days. And it's harder and harder to bring people along who absolutely do not want to be brought along.
Yeah, great question. And I think it definitely strikes at the heart the leadership, one leadership challenge around AI right now in school systems. And, you know, we like to say this work is like one part technical and three parts change management. And I think, you know, that what you articulated is one of the ways that this is change management work. So, you know, we try to think about the adoption curve, right? And so, you know, you have your early adopters and your enthusiasts, and then, you know, there's various across a continuum, you know, various degrees of buy-in and resistance, you know, and the other end of the continuum from your early adopters and your enthusiasts are not just folks who might be kind of passively not bought in, but people who will be vocally antagonists to this work and, you know, conversations around the AI. So, you know, one of the things that we've done with our leaders is try to help them think about what are the change management strategies that they know are best practice for other initiatives that they have led historically, you know, in their organizations. And many of those same strategies for how they might, you know, approach the rollout of the science of reading, let's say, you know, you're going to, if we, you know, go back maybe 3, 4, 5 years, before the science of reading had really picked up traction, you know, there were folks in schools who were antagonistic to this, and you know, still today. But I think the school system leaders who are leading that change were thinking about how do we leverage the folks who are enthusiastic about this and who are bought in? How do we peel off, like, what's the next layer of work that allows us to peel off some of the folks in the middle and bring them into the camp of those who are bought in? And then how are we attentive to the needs and the interests of the folks who might be skeptics? Because eventually, like, we want them on board. And especially if you have, you know, some key influencers there, you know, there's nothing more dangerous than a skeptic who is also a key influencer of his or her peers. And so, you know, you have to be, I think, really intentional about how you're empathetic to and addressing the needs and slowly working to cultivate the buy-in of folks on that end of the continuum as well. So we had, just to give you like a concrete example, we, in one of our convenings last fall, we had kind of broken out these various groups, and we had a planning template for our leaders to go through and actually list out some of the leaders in the organization who, in their organization, who they thought fell into each of these buckets. And then we had a list of strategies, like very concrete strategies for what to do with each group. And they went through and they said, you know, here are the people who are falling into this category of skeptics. And here, you know, from this list of 15 strategies, here's 3 or 4 that we think could be good to pursue with this particular group of people. So we've tried to, I think, just like validate that this is a real key challenge and then position our leaders with some concrete guidance and planning opportunities to go out and address it.
You know, Aaron, one thing I just want to highlight that you said that's great is, just like in any other pedagogical initiative, you know, you've named a couple, you know, science of reading, for example, you're not trying to get every educator in the entire district to try 20 things the next day in their classroom. You're trying to explain what are all the different options and what are the pedagogical best practices. But then let's really drill down on what's the most relevant that you can personalize for you and your students? Like you just mentioned, taking all these tools and really applying a few practices. So that's a great methodology that I find sometimes educators, I think, are like so nervous they see everything. But as you just said, it's really highlighting which ones should you start with and lean into first to get that fluency. So just thank you for highlighting a really great best practice that educators are used to. We are going to flip the script right now. So for the listeners out there, we always provide a prep doc for our guests. And Aaron actually also had some really wonderful questions that he thought would be really relevant for today. So you're hearing some of a combination of those two. But Aaron, you are now the host of the AMP211 podcast. You have the incredible AI ethicist Rebecca Boltzma as one of your guests, and then this other guy, Brett, that she lets come on things with her. What is your question that you are burning? You cannot wait to ask us. You've been waiting this whole podcast, and you're like, when will it be my turn? It is here, Aaron. Go ahead.
Yeah, so our work, as I've mentioned, centers on senior school system leaders, and I'm always interested in hearing about who's doing the work really well. And so I would love to hear from each of you, maybe one or even two school systems where you have been really impressed by the AI leadership in thinking about both, you know, leadership shown addressing both AI's opportunities and risks. Like, where have you encountered C-level leadership that you think you would put at the top of the continuum of folks who are really getting it right?
I'm going to name a few and just highlight like one thing I'm so impressed by the work they do. One is here in the greater New York City region is Alana Winnick over at Botanical Hills. The thing I am most impressed by in her work is how much student voice plays a role in her district and how they've now taken that role, the students, and they've been able to speak at conferences virtually around the world. And the way that Alana really started that best practice was by building a club where students started to learn innovative ways to use AI to change what they're doing at home or in schools, and then flipping it and actually teaching their teachers. Here's something cool I learned about AI. Do you want to learn about it? Such a novel approach that is very replicable and would be amazing to see more schools adopt that. So reach out to Alana Winnick for that one. Someone I just recently reconnected with in October at EdTech Week in New York City is Roberto Vargas. Many school districts are working towards building community handbooks or playbooks. So, right, there's policy that lives up at the board level that, you know, your everyday student or teacher isn't ever going to look at. And then there's the actual playbook. What does it feel like in a first grade classroom versus an eighth grade classroom versus English versus science? And so Roberto and his school have, you know, I got a chance to read it fresh off the press last week. And I walked with him, read it, and like kept stopping and just saying, I just want you to hear, like, I wish more people said exactly this when they talk to students or parents or any stakeholder about how you're using AI. And he kept putting just like why we're doing it this way. And just explaining the why was so helpful. So there's many other folks out there, but you said two would be okay. I don't want to.
Oh, you could keep going. I could have this conversation all day. And also, Roberto is a partner of ours, and so I'm excited to hear his name mentioned. But I'm happy to stay on this.
He is outstanding. I had a chance to read that handbook too, and it is like chef's kiss. It is everything that I would include, that I recommend people include. So, adding my check mark as the third behind that.
Well, Rebecca, maybe rule of three, maybe you can finish us off with a third person or in a different district or leave it.
You know what? I'm in Canada, and I was talking to a friend of mine at Grand Erie District School Board, which is in Ontario, and they've developed a set of micro-credentials, AI micro-credentials for every role in their district. So there's different ones for teachers than there is for different elements of support staff. And every single member of their district has a dedicated AI micro-credential that they now have the opportunity to work towards. And it's really sort of involving everybody in the process and giving everyone an opportunity to incorporate AI in their role, whatever it is in the district, which I thought was great to kind of formalize it like that instead of just showing up and doing a PD and than expecting people to just carry it on. I think it gives some good accountability and a little structure. So I was a huge fan of that.
I got one more group of people that don't get shouted out enough. Is that okay? This is it, I swear.
Yeah, no, keep going.
All right, so check this out. So literally 3 months ago, I met this amazing superintendent from a very, very rural district out in Texas called Rosebud Lot. He saw like the most basic ways I was using AI, just like in corresponding. Like he just watched me working one day over a cup of coffee and just was like, how are you doing that? And I shared, and he's like, can you do this in my district? And he got his whole leadership team to come to a barn the day before school started, and they had never used AI like systemically to think about, for example, the instructional cycle or other things. And so that was August 1st, right? Not even 3 months ago. And so we just met yesterday. We had an hour-long debrief with his curriculum director for his district. So he's like, well, you know, it's really hard and we're doing this and we're doing that. And, you know, as always, educators are like, they're not willing to accept that they're actually crushing it, right? Like they don't realize or they're not willing to say publicly, like, this is actually incredible, right? 3 months ago, they'd never touched AI. And she's like, well, every one of those principals now goes into classrooms. They transcribe the course, the classes using audio recordings. They put it into an AI tool. We now have all of our walkthroughs in one spot. It tells us trends. I'm like, yeah, that's not nothing. That's actually really ahead of the curve. And then she was like, well, we have these two math teachers who are using it every day and they're taking student work and they're using it to give feedback quicker. I'm like, yep. And it's like, and I would love to learn about programming because they reached out to me like the night after they made their programs and were like, can you help us fix programming? And I used to program and I was like, wow, AI is such a better way to program. And she's like, I'm like, yeah. She's like, can we have a meeting like now so we can get ahead of it? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, these are all like incredible things. And then she's like, can we have like in January, we're going to have a PD, a service day. And we have these two great teachers. Like, we're like, great. Do you want help like letting them showcase what they're doing? Just showing like in Rosebud Lot, this is literally how they're doing it. And she's like, yeah, they love when that happens. I'm like, right. Like you're doing all these things at the instructional level, at the leadership level, at the operational level. I'm like, if you were doing any one of these things, I'd say that's incredible. You've implemented that in a few months of your school. So anyway, that's the one I want to highlight. And I think it's again, this trend of like, people are doing great work. They don't even know how to recognize it.
I believe that there are like some hidden gems like that scattered all around the country, folks that are flying below the radar. We can probably, the three of us can think about who some of the usual players are that deservedly, you know, get invited to the panels to talk about the work that they're leading. But there's a lot more folks that are doing innovative work. And I will just take this opportunity to share, this is why we have launched the AI Innovation Index, which essentially is looking to scale system level data collection across the country from school districts, looking at what are staff saying about AI, what are students saying about the development of their AI literacy, and what is the leadership work that is happening. We think that if we can cast a really wide net in collecting that system level data from including, you know, districts like the one you just mentioned, Brett, then we're going to have a data set to identify some positive outliers, you know, broadly speaking, and across a bunch of really specific metrics to say, hey, here's this district in Oklahoma that nobody is talking about, but they're crushing it. And what can we do? The data backs up that they're crushing it. What can we do to learn from them, to spotlight their work, to make sure that it's getting the attention that it deserves? Right now, you know, we over the last couple of years, we've had this proliferation of surveys of educators, students, you know, ask them about their perspectives around AI, but we haven't had system level data that allows us to triangulate between what students and educators are saying in a particular system and the leadership work that's happening in that system. And so our initiative is really seeking to get that system level data so that we can say, where do we have these positive outliers in, let's say, the percentage of students who say that they are designing and building with AI to address real world problems? And then what do we know about the leadership work that's happening in that school system that is driving those positive outlier outcomes? So we haven't had good systems level AI innovation data, that we can compare, you know, across the country and internationally. And so we are hoping to do that in order to really be able to tell a lot more of the stories that, you know, like the one that you just mentioned, Brett.
Yeah. Hey, I'm just want to share, you know, again, Aaron highlighted some of these amazing things during our prep for this today's podcast. I'm on their website. I just want to share like one, because this almost is better than wrapping up with our Ocean's 11, because we'll make sure we add this to the show notes. But one, if you go to the AI Innovation Index Framework on their website, the first thing is check out who they're partnering with, right? Because you can always tell a lot about an initiative as to who's backing it. And I truly am saying the people on this are all people that I either deeply admire and have had the pleasure and privilege of working with or would aspire to in my future. These are some incredible organizations behind it. And then actually what I really just want to make sure people check out is go to the framework and look at the questions that they're asking either students or staff, because as someone who's had to administer so many staff surveys, these are really relevant right now. Like just the very first question for students: I understand how AI can be both helpful and harmful to me and others. If a student can't answer and say that they feel like a school has prepared them for that, it's going to be very hard to say we're equipping them for the future of society, workforce, post-secondary readiness. So just want to make sure our listeners, we'll add these in the comments. Really check this out. This seems like something every school should be aligning to at this time.
Thanks, Brett. Appreciate that.
Yeah. And so I just want to say, Aaron, we are going to make sure you get to that, you know, to your kiddo. I'm also about to head on to daddy duty. I can hear my son's piano lesson wrapping up, but I want to say thank you for the work you're leading, for bringing all of this to as many educators and communities as possible, and for just doing this great work. So thank you once again, Aaron, for joining us. Thank you, Rebecca, as always, for being the leader in this space. And thank you to our listeners. We look forward to welcoming you to our next episode of the M211 podcast. Have a wonderful day, everybody.